Yes, so let me thank the organizers for this wonderful opportunity. So this will be a survey talk. There will be some new results, but I'm not going even to express them in any detail. So the purpose of the talk is to try to list all the problems in which resurgence is mathematically understood, rigorously proven. Once more, so I'm going to use words and pictures, and there will be lots of references to back up the theorems in 30 minutes. That's the best I can do. And also, a purpose is to synchronize notations, terminology between mathematics and physics. All right, so we have seen transseries already, so there is no need of a sort of a kind of a baby introduction to transseries. This is a very simple transseries with small exponentials and divergent power series. As a matter of terminology, in physics you know a phi naught as the perturbative series. E to the minus kx phi k, you call them non-perturbative terms. And phi k's, often when there is this physical interpretation, are the fluctuations in various instanton sectors. The mathematics counterpart, phi naught, is the asymptotic expansion of whatever quantity we are considering. The phi k's are higher terms in the transseries. The two small objects in which we expand, which are 1 over x and e to the minus x, are called transmonomials. You may have more than that. In principle, you can have e to the minus e to the x. That rarely occurs. It does in some interesting models in QCD. Now, so there is this discrepancy. In math, the whole transseries, we think of it as a perturbative expansion. And the non-perturbative object is whatever you get after Borel summation. So that's an actual function, the non-perturbative counterpart of this thing. All right. Typically, transseries are resurgent, in particular, resummable. So two other things that I'm going to try to explain is a bit the meta-mathematics or philosophy behind this resurgent. Why is it so universal? Why are transseries so universally encountered? And a bit of the techniques that we use to prove resurgence, very, very simple examples. All right, so this is the first thing. Why are transseries and resurgence so universal? So mathematically, transseries are provably closed under all operations, and I qualified it that we used in perturbative expansions. So this is one of the references. There is no similarly general theorem for summability, and it's basically for lack of trying, because we would have to list all the operations, and tomorrow someone will come with a new operation and they have to start fresh. But we don't expect really conceptual difficulties in proving further closure of summation. Okay, so why does closure imply universality? Well, let's see why non-closure implies non-universality first. So if you would like to stay in the space of convergent Taylor series, you would need to avoid divisions, and you don't want to do that. So then if you allow a division, you get one-sided Laurent expansions. Fine, but now you have to avoid integration because you get the log, which you have to introduce. And once you allow the log, sort of you open Pandora's box, because the integration of 1 over log gives the full-fledged factorially divergent asymptotic expansion is 0. So you pretty much seem to have lost everything at this stage. The miracle, though, is that the proliferation of new objects and new phenomena stops right here. So you can repeat this procedure. Take whatever you have gotten, close it under all operations, including function inversion. We have a general formal contractive mapping that would cover all perturbative expansions that we can think of, and so on. So you keep going and going, nothing new happens, and in the quote-unquote limit, it's an inductive limit, you get the transseries. And since I promised that I'll say things in words, let me try it this way. So transseries are formally sentences in a language where your words are 1 over x e to the minus x and log x, or e to dx as well, of course. Combine them in any whichever way you want to form sentences, and there is this asymptotic rule of formation of sentences. The terms have to be arranged decreasingly. So you have the perturbative series, you have the first instant on action, which is much smaller, so you have to keep your sentence in this way, ordered, you go down. Okay. There may be, as I said, iterated exponentials and so on. Well, why does this closure imply universality? So to go beyond transitivity, one would have to exit all operations that we have listed there that really suffice for solving all these PDEs, integral equations, difference equations, and so on. So if you stay within these operations, you stay within transitivity. And you stay within some ability, let me say it conjecturally, but we know how to prove it, and we did prove it for all these particular cases. Another situation in which you exit transitivity is that you exit the regularity domain of the expansion. It means that you enter a regime where the actual physical quantity you're looking for, say the solution of a Pavlov equation, would form singularities. But transasymptotics allows us to do with that, to deal with that too. All right. So resurgent transitivities, they have a number of properties. We know that the transitivities that we encounter are resurgent, and you have noticed that many of the transitivities, maybe all, that occur in QCD, QFT, path integrals, and so on, are resurgent. At least this is numerically corroborated, if there is nothing better. One particular implication is that the transitivities would be generalized Borel-summable, not necessarily usually Borel-summable. And after you sum all the sectors, if you will, what you get is a function series which converges in the usual calculus sense to a unique solution, a unique answer to your problem. So, in a nutshell, this may have to be qualified in a number of ways, but that's the basic idea. Mathematical resurgence has been proven for transitivity solutions of most finite dimensional problems we encountered in analysis. More about that later. You have infinite dimensional problems, so that's a different animal. Terminology again, so a resurgent function in P-plane, or the Borel plane, or the convolutive model terminology, is the Borel transform, basically an inverse Laplace transform of a resurgent series. The Laplace transform of a resurgent function in P-plane is also called resurgent in the physical domain, if you want to be precise, or in the geometric model. So everything that comes from resurgent series carries the name resurgent throughout. So this is a picture on which I will try to explain and illustrate many of the things of resurgence that we know, that they are proved rigorously. So this picture represents the typical configuration, or a sort of landscape, if you will, of the P-plane, the Borel plane, of a divergent series that occurs as a solution, series solution, of a general nonlinear system of ordinary differential equations upon normalization, that I may describe predominantly. So what you see here as red dots, these are singularities. In Borel plane, you see that they are equally spaced on each ray. There are no essential singularities in Borel plane. These singularities are poles, maybe rarely. Typically, they are branch points such as log branch points, square root branch points, cubic, and so on. All right, so also as a matter of convention, an important one, so if you want to Borel sum a series in direction alpha, you take the Laplace transform of this object along a ray of angle negative alpha, the reason being that you want to keep e to the minus px, that px has to be real and positive. So that's the convention. When you do that, you may end up on a singular line such as this one. And physicists would say that that's non-Borel-summable. And that's not quite right, especially not after the work of Eckhall. So Eckhall discovered medianization, among other averages. I will not enter the zoo of averaging. But so you take the upper analytic continuation and a universal combination of analytic continuations that avoid singularities. For all these, this is simply a half of this and a fourth of that and so on and so forth, an eighth. They're universal, they don't depend on the differential equation. If you take the Laplace transform of this average, you get something as good as the usual Laplace transform, meaning that it preserves reality. This is something that you care about, no ambiguities. Right? And it commutes with convolution and everything else that you expect from sort of the things that are needed in Borel summation. There is another way to do it, which I prefer. So one can introduce, I mean, if these are, says, they may be bad singularities, poles of increasing order. One can introduce a space of distributions in which you can define a Laplace transform, and then you integrate right through this thing and you get a real valued object. So for me, that's more natural a source. I mean, it's just really an extension of Laplace transform in distributions. All right, so these singularities relate to the full trans series in the following way. If you take the branch jump across, say, 3 lambda 1 here, you would get the fluctuation around the third instanton. Same goes with all these things. So that's an interpretation of these singularities up to constants that we know, and let me not get into that. All right, and finally, something else that I want to see here, and I return to this, resurgence. So there are beautiful and very complex quite simple, of course, anyway, linear relations between all these singularities that you see here, as well as the singularities of the fluctuations of the instantons represented in Borel plane. And an example of that, in the most pedestrian way, I should write some alien derivatives. So if you take the branch jump of the kth fluctuation in Borel plane, evaluate it, oop, no, I don't want that. There you go, okay, it's going in the wrong direction, okay. So at the jth singularity of phi k, this gives the k plus jth instanton on the principal Riemann sheet. And I'll talk about the implications of that in a moment. So that's a non-obvious, non-trivial thing that does not hold for arbitrary analytic functions. So this is the subject of alien calculus. I gave a number of references here. Okay, so let me make a list of many of the known results. These are not all that we know in mathematics. So ODEs first, so resurgence of trans series, as well as alien calculus, resurgent relations, therefore medianization, nature of singularities, positions of singularities. So everything is known rigorously. For systems of the following type, so Y prime, it's a fully nonlinear system of equations in CN. F is an arbitrary analytic function. So this is the type, but what I mean by sort of, or what I want to also convey here is that you should be able to bring this through normalization. And this is something that can be done for all the equations that I know, all the Penrose equations or the special functions that can be brought to this form. By a sort of algorithm methods, you basically normalize the trans series. If you do that and see what transformations you need, that also normalizes the equation, right? Okay, so here I imposed non-resonance conditions condition for convenience. So this means if you take the linearization kind of at infinity, the linearization should have the matrix should have eigenvalues that are non-resonant over the rationals. All right, so I said that everything here is proved rigorously. If you have resonance, which you don't encounter, so I didn't enter this sort of other zoo of stuff, but this is not a sort of a substantial problem. Eckhall introduced the beautiful technique of acceleration, and it deals with all these resonances. There is a paper, there are several papers, Brakshma Ramis, they did dealt with accelerosomation of the main series of the perturbative series. Nothing has been done for trans series, but this is basically for lack of trying, because they don't kind of enter. If we need that, we can do it. All right, so that's what we know about ODEs. Similar results have been proven shortly after that by Brakshma for difference equations, basically in the same generality. So difference equations of kind of almost any kind that you would encounter, hopefully. They lead to resurgent trans series, to some abilities, no, singularity structure is known. You may have parametric resurgence, so this is resurgent in the independent variable. Parametric resurgence, there is a whole literature, and things started with the seminal work of Voros, but later, I mean, there is this whole Japanese school, they covered all sorts of cases. I think this is also very much under control. Parametric resurgence means that you want resurgent in H bar, that's an external parameter to the equation. Finite dimensional integrals with saddles, finite dimensional, are also fairly well understood. And this is work that goes back to Barry Howells, later Chris and Delabere. Though they did not treat the resurgent structure insofar as I understand, it can be easily recovered from the singularities of the Jacobian that they do use, they pass to the action variable to get a one-dimensional integral. So this can be disentangled. They also dealt with manifolds with boundaries, and those introduce all sorts of other subtleties, and they are in their paper. So these are also fairly well understood. For PDEs too, I understand quite a bit. I mentioned this a number of times, so the right way to use resummation in PDEs is not to take the solution, but quote unquote to resum the PDE. So you do a Borel transform of the PDE, and that's what you analyze. PDEs, of course, depend on an initial condition. You don't want to restrict yourself to initial conditions that are resurgent. But something else stays resurgent in PDEs, and this, for instance, an example is the resurgence in the independent variable t time for large t of the propagator of the time periodic Schrödinger equation in ionization settings. So this we covered in all sorts of models, including the hydrogen atom and so on. You have full resurgence. So you look at the resurgence of the propagator or the Green's function. So that's what can be resurgent, really, and meaningfully. Well, this is work by myself, Joe Leibowitz. You'll see the references at the end. And when I don't mention other names, typically these are mine. But, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I mean, that's, well, that's also what I know best, you know. I'm accountable for this. All right. Now, if you take nonlinear equations, there is no sort of equivalent of a propagator or whatnot. There you still can Borel sum the PD, and one gets sort of a Laplace transform representation of solutions of, I would say very general, systems of nonlinear PDs. Where the principal symbol can be of any order, so this is any system. We impose some conditions of ellipticity, say it's a Laplacian, bi-Laplacian, whatever. So Borel summation also applies in this sense to Navier-Stokes, on which we have a series of separate papers because it had a sort of separate significance. Okay. And integral differential equations in hydrodynamics, Sale Tanvir has a number of papers. He's somewhere away and I couldn't, so that's the reference that I have at this time, but there will be references in a moment. So that's what I sort of meant, that most problems that we needed are covered rigorously. Okay. Since this question arose, here are some outstanding questions where resurgence was instrumental. In other words, there are no other methods to address these problems. nonlinear stability of self-similar blow-up, that is singularity formation, in supercritical wave maps and Young mills. Supercritical means that the power of the nonlinearity is too high for the inverse Laplacian to sort of tackle. And this is what in physics you'd call the relevant case versus the irrelevant case as supercritical. Indeed, the solution of the time-periodic Schrödinger equation in fields which are of order one, so we started this work in 2000, and up to now there is nothing else but this resurgent method. A proof of Dubrovin's conjecture, which was important for NLS, that's also done only in this way, and there are many more examples. Now, let me try to sketch an example of resurgent analysis in P1. So P1 is one of these equations that you can normalize, and this is the normalized form that would satisfy my assumptions if I write it as a system, but I'll leave it as is now. So this is the shape of P1. What you do is you inverse Laplace transform the equation and you study its properties, analyticity and non-analyticity properties. So this is what you get from this differential equation by taking the inverse Laplace transform. This is that. This becomes convolution. This is this one here. And p squared minus 1, the reciprocal of that, comes from this term and that term. What you see here, you strongly expect singularities at p equals plus minus 1. You do a local analysis, which is not very different from an analysis of ODEs. Basically, they become ODEs locally. And these are 1 over square root branch points. Now, you take this and you iterate, say, in a space of distributions. So you write a contractive mapping for this one. And you would see that your distributions have to allow for singularities at all the integers, because they will appear by this self-convolution. It just spreads at all the integers. But since they are gotten by self-convolution, these singularities will have intricate relations among themselves. And these are the resurgent relations, right? Because they are created one from the master one. Okay, so here is the full trans-series of P1, of tronchi of P1. So you have the exponential terms. Everything here depends only on the equation. You have a free constant that parameterizes the tronchies solutions. If you cross a Stokes line, there is a very simple change in this constant. The constant goes into C plus S. So this sort of characterizes what is called the Stokes automorphism. And since you get a whole lot of solutions by just this change, if you play with the relations that this creates among solutions, you can pull out all sort of alien derivatives, alien calculus, just from that. I'm not saying that this is the best way, but this is the most pedestrian way to do it. And this once more is a resurgent relation which relays the kth instanton in Borel plane, its jump across the jth singularity in terms of higher instantons. And this allows you to reduce the whole analysis of resurgent structure to the first Riemann sheet. So if you play with this, you don't need to go on any other Riemann sheet, because somebody later will give you back the information on the first Riemann sheet. In particular, the whole structure of the perturbative series and all the others is contained in this H case, on the universal covering of C minus Z, basically. Okay. And in particular, this shows an endless continuation, because you reduce yourself to the first. So that's another concept, endless continuation. You can go anywhere on the Riemann surface, or universal covering. All right. So a sketch of transasymptotics. What happens if you approach singular regions? You see, so this is the trans series of a tronchie. There are two small variables here, e to the minus x, basically, and 1 over x. And you can regard the trans series as a formal function of two variables, a Taylor series in two parameters, the exponential and 1 over x. It's a convenient way to think of it. And normally, the exponential is small. The exponentials are widely separated, the instanton sectors, if you want. So it's convenient to group all the 1 over x things, which are the small potatoes in this business, and you collect them multiplying each exponentials. Okay, 5 minutes. Let's see what I can do in 5 minutes. All right, but if you approach an anti-Stokes line, by definition, one in which the exponential is not small anymore, it starts oscillating and then it becomes large and the trend series is nonsense, it's natural to do things the other way around. So you the exponentials become the large things, you collect them in front of the powers. So just interchange this thing. This is rigorously proven, this is an expansion that is valid and so on and so forth. Take this, plug it in P1, say, and you get a set of equations with very simple solutions. The leading order is xi over 12 minus 1 squared. You see formation of singularities. That's when xi equals 12. And this gives you infinitely many singularities because the exponential is periodic in the imaginary directions. We have an array of singularities. You can go to the next one. There are beautiful ways for P1 to sort of do something better, as Marcel showed yesterday. And in terms of more subtle, even or complex transasymptotic phenomena, they occur in PDEs of the kind of Sergei was showing. And those are also well understood, and I'm just giving references. Okay, 3 minutes and 20 seconds, okay. So a very sort of the simplest baby, the baby of a toy model of a PD analysis. So here is the heat equation. So it's an evolution equation. One may be tempted, not you, but some other people may be tempted to try to solve it by power series. And if you do that, you plug, it's going in all sorts of directions. You plug it into the heat equation, you get a recurrence relation for these terms, and you get two derivatives at each step and the factor of k, which doesn't help tremendously, because Cauchy's formula tells us that, put everything together in terms of the initial condition, you get 2k derivatives of the initial condition, k factorial at the denominator. This means 2k factorial over k factorial, k factorial divergence remains. The small parameter is t. You would be tempted to Borel sum this expression. Don't just Borel sum the PDE. Again, it's better to normalize it, so let me. The natural variable for inverse Laplace transform is 1 over t. You need a large variable, right? So you do some normalization in t, in x, in q, which is p, whatever. So these are sort of algebra things that I will not bother you with. But the end result is that you started with a hyperbolic equation, which is degenerate, and Cauchy-Kovalevsky doesn't apply. The end result is the wave equation. If you want to solve it by power series, you had nothing better than that, the series converge. Of course, you can take this elementary solution of the wave equation. This is true in any dimensions, I mean, and many more things. But if you undo all these transformations, you get the heat kernel and the general solution of the heat equation. Maybe it's one of the shortest ways to get that formula. The point is not this one, because you will not be able to get anything explicit for general PDEs, but this machinery goes through. So you would end up with a Laplace transform or integrals of this type, where instead of this thing, you'll have a Green's function that you know only through contractive mappings and other properties. But it gives you actual solutions of your problem. If you Borel sum the PDE, then, okay, so I have 40 seconds. I'm almost done. It allows you to deal with initial conditions that are far from resurgence. They can be in a Sobolev space, because you Borel summed the propagator, the Green's function. See? So this is the right thing to do in PDEs. So conceptually similar, though, I mean, it's a bit of an exaggeration. There are many technical things that you have to be careful about in general nonlinear PDEs, but basically, this approach would prove resurgence and resummation in systems of PDEs, Navier-Stokes included. And once more, I mentioned this resurgence of the propagator of the Green's function of the time-periodic Schrödinger equation. for lifetime. This is very well understood now in any number of dimensions. I'm mentioning it again, because once more resurgence is one that applies to the propagator. In all these models with the Schrödinger equation, there is a Borel sum of the series, and it does not, of the series of the wave functions. And it doesn't give you anything immediately meaningful. It gives you the dispersive part of the wave function. So whatever you get about Borel summation goes to zero in L2, which makes no sense. So therefore, you are always forced to take into account all the instantons, which in this case turn out to be a form of gamma of vectors. So it's a gamma of vector decomposition of the whole thing. And okay, 1 minute and 4 seconds after. Thank you. And these are references now. I listed as many as I could to get some completeness. Unfortunately, most of the things are in papers. So this, of course, is the Bible. You have to have it. So right, this is about all these. You'll figure out because they correspond to things in the main text over there. Multi-summability and difference equation by Brachma. One of the many, many papers of Isaac WKB. Where you see references. Okay, let me stop here. There are references over there.
Okay, any questions?
So near the beginning, you opened by explaining how to get various terms in the trend series representation, like logs and exponentials and so on, from simple mathematical operations. Can you give some example of how one would get iterated exponentials or iterated logs and things like
well,
that?
Well, you don't get them in simple models in analysis. I think you have to go to infinite dimensions, unless, of course, you do something that you need to do, but doesn't sort of occur in practice, namely, so you take equations with analytic coefficients, and you get resurgent functions. Take those resurgent functions, use them as coefficients of a new ODE. Then you get one iterated, two iterated exponentials. But
I think that's how it occurs in the context.
Ah, okay. Then it's covered by this at least in sort of in a hand waving sense here.
Questions. I have a question about the universality of the resurgent series.
Right.
So we can, in solutions of, let's say, well, you can easily build the example of entire, let's say, entire functions, which is asymptotics, which involve the series in your variables, and 1 over the x, but also the 1 over the x and power, some certain power nu, which is arbitrary.
Right, I mean, that would be parametric resurgence.
But you can set this number whatever you want, like this, right. Square root of 2.
Yes.
Right? It means, what's your statement? That you said that...
So in all these, you have parametric resurgence, you have...
You can set the parameter whatever you want, this number, right?
And initially you think of it as being large or small. And you have asymptotic expansions in that parameter and maybe in something else. So you take the Borel transform of the asymptotic series in your parameter. Once you understand that, then at the end of the day, you can take its square root of 2 or whatever the problem allows you, because you may get into singularities.
Perhaps I just don't understand what the parameters.
Sorry?
Parameters here. Because,
yeah, parameters.
But originally, suppose you're given certain equations, which are no parameters at all. All the numbers fixed, right? You get expansions, and you see the fractional powers. Maybe you can extend it, you can add this parameter to the original problem, but maybe not.
I don't know. So the way we do it, so that's a bit different from sort of the Japanese school. So you take a Borel transform with respect to whatever you want, you have as variables or you want to create as variables. And you get an extended PDE, right? And it's the properties of this extended PDE that control the original one after Laplace transform. If I get your question, because I feel that maybe we discussed after that,
Yes, I'd like some advice on terminology.
Okay.
There is a very basic series which apparently violates what you said. It's the Jacobi theta series.
Yeah.
So it has a very simple sum of exponential and square minus n squared t, and it has a natural boundary.
Sure.
So would you call that still a partially resurgent function? Or?
Well, this in particular has some resurgence properties, so that there is quasi-analytic continuation through the boundary. The thing is the following. If you take this by hand, you can construct whatever. I mean, things that grow like k factorial to the k factorial to the everything. So universality is with respect to what the Kalb calls natural problems. And more precisely, so you list a number of operations, and it's whatever you can get through those operations. The theta function is not generated through those operations that I'm aware of. So it's exempted.
Would you call such a function if you do find partial information,
So there is a paper of mine that I haven't listed. So something like this occurs in difference equations, even a very simple one. In Borel plane, you get a natural boundary. In fact, not one, but infinitely many, whatever that means. And we were able to give a rigorous meaning to crossing all those natural boundaries. And so that's resurgent in this sense. Yeah.
It's kind of related to my big question that when you are writing this monomial or whatever, you can have kind of different instanton action, right? Let's say that you have different one, right? So then it would be not just this exponent minus kx, right? It would be some different coefficients there. So you imply that it's okay, just some of the different one.
Right. I mean, maybe it's not the perfect sort of equivalent, but in nonlinear ODEs, you get n exponentials in principle. Yeah,
but look, even another action would be, for example, the coincidence could be, say, x squared instead of x.
E to the minus x squared. Okay, so then you need to learn Axeller's summation. So if you have e to the minus x and e to the minus x squared, then you have a mixture of divergences.
Yeah.
Typically, you cannot disentangle them by simple means, but Ekal has a procedure. Basically, you sum in the sort of most divergent variable, and there are operators that correspond to passage from one Borel plane to the next. So you have to classify the critical times, in your example, x and x squared, and you start with x squared and build down with the Kalb operators.
So it's like if I use an extra coupling, like another y equal to x squared.
Right. But I mean, that does introduce complications. They are understood, but I didn't speak about that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. So I guess similar to the irrational power question, if you study a conformal field theory correlation function, I think you can expand it around some generic point, and you'll just have some nice series expansion that probably has a finite radius of convergence, although there's also the operator product expansion, which is what we think of as being good, but that's an expansion with an infinite number of irrational powers, although it also has a finite radius of convergence. Mm-hmm. Should I think of this function as likely being resurgent, or is it outside
right.
the domain?
So you have infinitely many irrational powers which are independent, the root 2 and pi and
they're
zeta of 3 and whatnot, this kind of.
Yeah.
If there are infinitely many, there's not a transseries. I mean, maybe we can extend the notion of transseries. Transseries are finitely generated, so you have to have a finite number of transmonomials. So the thing is, it will take me a while, but one has to be very careful when you have infinitely many generators, because you can get into serious paradoxes. So one has to work carefully. So, all right.
I mean, somehow it's probably better than that, in the sense that if I expand around not the OP limit, I think I actually just have integer powers.
Well, then do that. don't try infinitely powers, though.
Just regarding the theta functions, I mean, they're solutions to a differential equation. So why don't they fit into your framework? They're just solutions of the heat equation.
There is another example which is famous and is related to this one, is the Chazy equation, third order. So it's the simplest ODE that has natural boundaries. So that's an equation that cannot be normalized in this form. Even the equation of elliptic functions cannot, and those don't have transitivity.
So but what part is it that breaks down? Is it the normalization?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it would fail that. I mean, but typically these are exactly integrable models. So those are problems that don't have transitivity. If I don't have transitivity, I don't know what to sum, basically. Or in some sense, it's its own transitivity if you take the variable to be small enough. Yes.
So Ovidiu, what's the relation between the notion of integrability of a set of equations and resurgence?
Resurgence goes beyond integrability. It doesn't require integrability. When you have integrability, you can use resurgence to calculate all sorts of things like Stokes multipliers and whatnot. But insofar as I know, there is no sort of imprint of integrability in Borel plane. I'm not aware of anything special that can be seen in P1.
Can I jump in at that point? So there's Fokash's unified transform method. Do you know that? That's for like integral nonlinear systems, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and for geo boundaries. So how does a Borel transform fit in with his integral representations that he gets there? Have you looked at that?
I mean, well, in a sense, I would say that if you have an integrable model, you can use isomonodromy. That's the cheapest thing that you can do. Those are linear equations. Of course, the Borel structure is very simple. But then you used already the whole machinery. You use Fokas transform.
You mentioned the use of distributions as an alternative to Eccles medianization, if yeah. I understood correctly. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little on that? I mean, how you control multivaluedness with distributions?
What you do, so you have to pass the first singularity because otherwise you don't have contractivity. And then, maybe the simplest way to think is you can do better than this, but you can do upper summation. The integral exists in the usual sense. So if the singularities are not wild, you can just work in L1. Right, so you're looking for solutions which are L1. That picks sort of a certain analytic continuation, or you define it. To be so, if you have a square root branch point, you can take the half-half and then.
If you have several branches,
yeah.
You select one of them or you do some
other thing? The easiest thing, you just do the upper thing. Mm-hmm. And then you can show that if you start with a precise constant somewhere, you get real valuedness. Okay. And if you translate that, okay. Mm-hmm.
To perhaps answer a little bit Gerald's question, in my limited experience, it happens that in some 1D problems, which are integrable in a way, the imprint in the Borel plane is that you have sufficiently many resurgence equations and a sufficiently rich resurgence algebra to provide enough constraints to, in fact, resolve the problem. Whereas in a
linear problem, something like P1 would.
No, I think of a 1D Schrödinger equation.
No. Yeah. Okay. Okay. No,
then
no. Linear problems. No.
And then, whereas in analogous multidimensional problems, which is what I will talk about this afternoon, obviously it's not. We have not enough information of that sort. So that's.
I mean, for P1, you have exactly as many or as few resurgence relations as in any old non-integrable thing. Well, that's
okay, any more questions? Okay, so thank the speaker again. Thank you.